Hey guys, welcome to the new episode of the Andy Social Podcast. And once you're done here, make sure to head over to Goat King Riders Club,
where we never let grammar get in the way of a good story.
Good yarn.
Yarn? Story? Yeah. Fuck, doesn't matter, does it?
But it does when we're doing the promo for it.
Oh well, that's what they're getting.
Also, come and check us out on YouTube for full video versions. Enjoy the show.
Hey, another week of podcasting, and before we kick into this week's episode, you know what I'm going to say, Patreon. Patreon.com/AndyDowling. We now have Team Achronoplan. Team Achronoplan has launched. It is in motion. It is flying across the water. Do you know what Achronoplan is? If you don't, go to Patreon. Patreon.com/AndyDowling. There are Achronoplan t-shirts, and there's a great little community there that are supporting the Andy Social Podcast. All the money that comes in from Patreon goes to covering all the production costs, hosting, gear, getting around town, all the costs and expenses that come into running a podcast, which I've been doing for the past 5 years. So go and check it all out. Patreon.com/AndyDowling. There is a weekly Patreon-only podcast that comes out every Tuesday morning, 6 a.m. A bit of karaoke, a bit of Achronoplan talk, some really educational, informative stories, some TV adverts from the 90s, you know, just throw some random stuff in there just to keep everyone entertained. And it's probably the best podcast in the world, if you ask me. So go over to patreon.com/AndyDowling. Go and check it all out. We'd love to have you. Cheers. Hey, welcome to the Andy Social Podcast, episode 255. And this week's guest is Alan Christensen. Alan is an ex-AFL football player, first AFL player I've ever had in the podcast. There you go. And I say ex by only a few weeks. He only just recently retired from the Brisbane Lions, and he's in the process of moving from Brizzy down to Hobart to start the next chapter of his life, which we talk a little bit about in this chat. Alan's had an amazing career in the AFL. He played for the Geelong Cats and also for the Brisbane Lions. He won a premiership with the Cats back in 2011. And more recently, last year, he started a podcast, which is called Addicted to the Game. And this is how I discovered Alan, actually. Alan and his brothers, as well as a mate, talk about mental health, addiction, different types of adversity with people in the sporting world, musicians, different types of professionals. And it's really, really informative. It's a great way of sort of looking through the window into Alan's world and his brothers, and just hearing some of these discussions and some of these topics that a lot of people go through. And it's just interesting to hear it from a professional sports person who's gone through his own story. And Alan's story, which he'll talk about in this chat, is him going through a gambling addiction and really sort of turning his life around and getting some stability. And we talk a lot about that in this chat and how he's using his experiences to help other people through the podcast and other community work that he's been doing. So lots of great stuff in here. I'm going to dump everything in the show notes over at andysocial.net and andydowling.net. Go and check out Addicted to the Game. Whatever the hell you're listening to this podcast through right now, just go and search for Addicted to the Game after you finish listening to this, of course, and make sure you subscribe to that. And I'll just dump everything in the show notes. I'm going to stop fucking talking now. So please enjoy this great chat with Alan Christensen. I've got to say, like, I'm a guy that knows very little about your world in general. Like, everything that's associated with you, I know bugger all. But but your podcast, man, like, it has started to open up so many different things to me. And I think just, like, so many different topics. I mean, just what you've been doing professionally for the past, far out. I mean, well and truly over a decade, probably longer than that. And you know, things such as mental health and addiction, and then obviously your cultural background as well. I mean, just such an eye-opener. And I just wanted to say straight off the bat, like, congrats on just getting this up and running, because you've been doing it for about a year now or something like that.
Yeah, we've been, we started last year and then we all had stuff going on, so we took a little break, and then this year we're like, all right, we're going to get into this for real. So this year's been pretty consistent, but yeah, it's been good. You know, it opened a lot of doors for me. That's why we're moving to Hobart, because, you know, I've got a job with a mental health charity down there. So it's been pretty crazy, but also keeps me accountable. And like with my gambling, like the more I speak about it, and the more people that listen, the more people I feel like I'm accountable to, and don't want to let them down. So It's good.
It must be like a good type of pressure that you place on yourself, because as you said, it's like an accountability piece. If you like, it's not just you holding yourself accountable. You've got other people, you know, you're preaching out there, telling people your story, but you know, you don't want to sort of let other people down.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, they listen to, you know, what I say when it comes to, you know, my gambling and all that. So, you know, they take that advice, and I guess like people with addictions, they have slip ups all the time. Like, it's not like it's, you know, a mistake, but I feel like if I slip up and I give the opportunity for someone who might have been listening to me a chance to go, oh, well, if he's doing it, I can do it. So it's a little bit of a burden, but I put myself out there and I carry it like really well, so not really too much of an issue.
With the podcast and getting it started, was that sort of in the back of your mind for a while before you started that you wanted to do something like this, or was it sort of like a bit of a spare of the moment going, oh shit, like, oh yeah, let's give a podcast a go and just see how it all pans out?
No, it was so I spoke at Big Sound in 2018, and I was originally going to go talk about just being like an Indigenous footballer and, you know, the pressures that come with that, but also, you know, the mental health battles. And it was actually the first time I ever spoke publicly about my gambling addiction, and it just kind of like spur of the moment. And some journalist was there and she started putting a bit of pressure on me, saying like, oh, you know, like, this is public knowledge now, I'm just going to write an article about it if you don't speak to me. And I was like, no, like, I'm not going to let someone like take away my opportunity to speak about what I've been through and stuff like that. So I was like, to my brothers, I was like, we should start a podcast, and, you know, we can talk about sport and we can talk all the dribble that we want, but I can also share my story and I can tell it exactly the way I want to tell it, and I can put things in, I can leave things out that I want to do, and I don't have to be at the mercy of some journalist and their interpretation of my words. So that was a big driving force behind it.
It must be, I mean, it's, I think for most people out there, they don't have that extra element of pressure of being in the public eye. And I think, like, just you explaining that just sort of makes so much more sense behind sort of the motivation behind it, because, I mean, I just reading sort of stuff online in hindsight now, sort of after the fact, and all the pieces sort of placed together with, you know, your story, you know, you moving from Geelong up to Brizzy, I mean, you know, you're trying to, you know, start a new chapter and you know, start this next stage in your career. But I mean, it would have been really hard to sort of talk about it, because you're just worried about what gets out into that public domain and what gets explained and talked about behind your back. And there's an element of, like, you lose control over it, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was only just coming to terms with, you know, having a gambling addiction as well. So there was 1,000 things going through my head. And then also packing up my life and moving up to Brisbane, where I had no family and I had no friends up there. So there was all this other stuff going on in the background, plus dealing with the, you know, the innuendo and stuff that comes around a player when they, you know, leave a football club for no apparent reason. And, you know, that sort of stuff had a real big effect on, you know, myself, my family, my friends, because, you know, there was a lot of, you know, shit talked about me that just was completely false, and I had to deal with that. And, you know, until I really started speaking about, you know, my story, you know, 4 years later, that people, you know, started to understand why I had to leave Geelong.
What were the first steps sort of coming into Brisbane, where you said, like, you know, you haven't got family up there and, you know, don't really have much of a network apart from the club itself? I mean, what are those first few weeks or months look like? I mean, how did you get yourself stable and try and work out, okay, well, I've got to get a routine happening and some stability around me? I mean, what was the approach?
Yeah, so when I met with Brisbane for the first time, I pretty much laid out everything. So I told them, this is what's happened, this is me. You can pretty much take it or leave it. And I spoke to a couple other clubs and I could tell they went iffy on me, but they were like, oh, okay. Where Brisbane were like, oh, we can help you with this, we can help you with that. And it felt, made me feel like really welcome. And, I was only a 23-year-old. Like, I wasn't that old. So when I got up to Brisbane, I guess the biggest thing for me was that, you know, the surroundings were so fresh and new to me. Whereas in Geelong, I'd walk past a pub and I'd lost 5,000 there, or another pub, or TAB, and I'd won 10,000 there. And, you know, the racetrack was, I knew exactly where I was going and all this sort of stuff. So that were really big triggers for me in my gambling. And I knew I had to get out of Geelong. You know, it was probably a kind of a brash decision in hindsight, looking back at it now as a 29-year-old, where I just like got out as far as away as I could go, bar probably Perth. But it was the best thing for me in the end. I knew that, you know, walking down the street and not having that thing in the back of my mind just eating away at me about, you know, that, oh, go in there because you know you've won heaps of money, or avoid that street because, you know, you've lost heaps of money on that street. So getting up there and, you know, getting into a new house, a new environment, trying to earn the respect of my teammates, it actually really helped me, you know, get through that first, you know, 3 or 4 months, which are really hard for a person who's battled an addiction to get through.
And I assume, I mean, I know nothing about AFL or even just doing anything that involves a degree of physical effort, but I assume that, like, you know, just going into a new club, I mean, you got a lot to prove anyway, just like from a professional point of view. So, you know, it's probably a really nice distraction for you to go in there and just have to build those relationships, show what you're made of. Obviously, you've got a reputation of where you've come from, but it's still a clean slate. So it's probably worked out well that it was able to be a convenient little escape, at least momentarily, just until you found your feet.
Yeah, absolutely. And the boys were really good. I was able to be pretty open and honest with them about what was going on as well. And they're like, it doesn't bother us. Like, you come here, like, you prove yourself to us, not what the person you have been, but, you know, the person you are going to be here. So that was, you know, another weight off my shoulders, knowing I could just, you know, reset pretty much my life and just get going again.
I know that, like, a lot of people, and especially blokes, are like, you know, they struggle to even just talk about anything that's, you know, more than just the surface level of any type of conversation. You know, getting a bit deep and meaningful is a bit of a tough thing to do. You know, I mean, it must have, I'm just assuming here, you can tell me if I'm off the mark, but for you to sort of make that call and go, I need to get out of here, but to also sort of lay it out for other clubs to say, you know, I want to relocate. I want to go and play for another team, but this is where I'm at and this is the circumstances that I'm in. I mean, was it a case of just feeling like your back was against the wall, or did you have some sort of people around you that were saying, look, you need to do this, you need to start sort of throwing it out there and being a little bit vulnerable?
Yeah, it was more about being more transparent about another club taking me on about what was going on, because as we said before, there was like little murmurs going on around like what I was up to and all this stuff that just wasn't true. So I was, I just wanted to make sure if I was going to go to another club that they knew like what was going on in my head and what I was dealing with, and, you know, this is a battle like we're going to face, and if I'm going to beat it, like, I'm going to need you to be by my side. So yeah, and it was more about, like, a lot of addicts would know, and, if, you know, you probably have a few people who have been to addictions. The biggest thing about having it is, you know, you become the ultimate liar and manipulator. And I was just sort of, you know, at that stage, I was sick of, you know, lying about my gambling and all that. So I just wanted, you know, it was almost like I was projecting that, you know, I'm going to beat this and I never want to do this again. So I was just really open and honest about it.
Did you have anyone around you that was sort of a bit of a support mechanism when you were still in Geelong before you made that decision?
Yeah, so like all my family and friends are from Geelong, so I grew up in Geelong, so I was really lucky. And the thing is, with my best friends, we're all doing it together. We're all punting together and doing it. So we've been able to help each other out over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, trying to get back to either me absolutely stopping and never betting again, or just trying to pull it in control with a few of my mates. So it's been good having friends who are sort of on the same journey as I am, because we were probably all heading down a road that wasn't that pretty My family, obviously, and my now wife, her family, like, I put her through the ringer, but she, like, always stood by my side and made sure that I was, you know, trying to do the best I could when it came to beating my addiction.
When you started the podcast and you're speaking to all these different people, you know, that they've got their own stories, and no doubt outside of the podcast, you've met a whole heap of people in your own journey. What have you sort of learnt? You know, obviously you've gone through, you're going through, you continue to go through your own experiences, but I mean, what have you learnt that's sort of been a little bit of a, I don't know, like a light bulb moment where you see how other people battle addiction and how they live with addiction? You know, is there anything that you sort of learnt along the way and you thought, geez, like I haven't really looked at it from that angle before?
Yeah, I guess the thing at the moment for me is, like, I'm really starting to notice how much people are really starting to talk about mental health, all the things that come with that, you know, alcohol addictions and drug addictions. But the thing I'm finding at the moment is the people I speak to about gambling, they always want to remain anonymous. Mm. So, it's, you know, something that I'm really trying to change is making me want to work even harder to make sure that, you know, guys and girls who, you know, are battling with gambling at the moment, they don't feel ashamed about it, because, you know, the way Australian culture works, if a bloke gets, you know, too pissed, you know, everyone kind of laughs at him. Mm. But if you see one of your mates probably lose $5,000 at the races, everyone sort of just avoids it. Like, they might, you know, take the piss out of him a little bit or whatever. But the way Australian culture works, if that continually happens, they'll just tease that guy about losing money. They won't say anything like, oh, mate, you're probably losing too much money. Where if you, one of your mates was drinking 5 or 6 times and like in days in a row, I reckon you'd hear a majority of people would hit up their mate and say, look, mate, you've got to slow down. Like, this is getting a bit out of control, because we'll talk about drugs and we'll talk about alcohol, but we still won't talk about gambling in that sort of manner. So it's making, yeah, everyone I'm speaking to, and as I said, like, making me actually go, oh, wow, like, everyone I'm speaking to. So, yeah, last week I just had a person message me, and they just said, yeah, I don't want to tell anyone. I was like, it's pretty full on. So, yeah, I'm trying to, you know, change the thought process around having a gambling addiction and trying to break the stigma around it.
Yeah, it's a tough one, man, because, you know, if you turn on a TV and or even just online scrolling through, you know, Instagram feeds or whatever it might be, you've got all this online gambling, you've got all this online betting. It's like, it's so integrated into our culture as well. I mean, or it's just it's not even a Western thing, it's just a global thing. It's in every culture these days, but it's just such a, it's easier than ever as well. And I mean, from my background, being a musician, you know, especially in Sydney, I mean, it was everywhere in Australia, you know, live venues just got absolutely ripped apart because all these venues wanted to put poker machines in there. And yeah, and you're just going, fuck, like, and then you look back into this venue and they've shut down the live part. They just put a bunch of machines in there, and it's just these people that have just turned into zombies, and they're just there for 12 hours a day, just like pressing buttons and just crossing their fingers, hoping that the next press is going to get them the big dollars. And you're just like, fuck, man. Like, and the venues turn around and say, well, we're making more money having these machines in here than having live bands on. And it's like, oh, you have to look at the bigger picture. You have to sort of think that this is more than just the bottom dollar. It's a community thing as well. And I mean, luckily I've seen a bit of a pushback in the last few years where venues are getting rid of a lot of this stuff and making it a little bit more community oriented. But yeah, man, it's a tough thing, and it's not spoken about a lot. I think it's in a way, it's still kind of a little bit celebrated in a way as a bit of a pastime.
Yeah, absolutely. It's especially with the pokies, a lot of venues really accommodate you know, they're big players and the people they're going to make more money off. So, you know, we've heard from people that, you know, venues will have runners. So if a person wants something outside the venue, they'll go get it for them. Yeah, right. So they don't leave and stuff like that. So it's pretty crazy. And, you know, and we know that from the people we speak to, that if, you know, sporting clubs and that remove their pokies, it takes a little while to recoup the money that they lose. But in the end, they always going to be better off because, you know, a mum and dad don't really want to take their kids to a place when all you can hear is pokie machines in the background. So they're not going to go to those venues and it becomes a less family-friendly place. So eventually, hopefully, clubs start to realise this. And as you said, like, there's a moral and social obligation to, you know, look after your patrons and letting the, you know, Joe from, you know, down the road sit there for 10 to 12 hours just smacking the machine isn't looking after him.
No, that's it. And especially these places where you've got like that more family-friendly atmosphere. You know, if you got, I mean, I just remember being a kid and, you know, getting what I thought at the time, just getting dragged into a pub for dinner or whatever. And yeah, you could hear the pokies going in the next room. And as a kid, like they sound fantastic. They're exciting, you know, it's so like all these lights coming from the other room and these noises and everything, all these different songs. And so when you turn 18, I mean, what else do? You just, you walk in there and you go, fuck yeah, here we go, let's do it. And, you know, some people can have a go and they walk away and other people just never leave. And it's, But it's not a positive thing at all. It just doesn't help the community whatsoever. So I applaud you for like just not only just going through your own journey, but I think just understanding or just seeing more clearly that it is something that when you talk about the different addictions that are out there, and there's quite a few that, you know, I think from a gambling point of view, it's not something that is often talked about. I think there's probably a lot of people that I know that I would be oblivious to that are probably battling something very similar.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more that, you know, a person like me who has somewhat of a platform from my, you know, football career, I can talk about things like that. Hopefully, you know, it helps, you know, a mum talk to their son or daughter about gambling because they heard us speak. So that's what we want to do. And yeah, we'll continue to do it.
This might be a really stupid question. I don't know. You can tell me if it's stupid, but for me, like I've been lucky. I mean, I've got a lot of bad habits, but it's never been anything that's completely absorbed or controlled my life. So I've been really fortunate. But you know, like I've got friends, I've got family, I've got people that I associate with and run into throughout life. And I think when you see those red flags where you start to see somebody is struggling with whatever that might be, I mean, just from your perspective and from what you've been through, I mean, what's the best way of approaching somebody to have that conversation? Because I no doubt if nobody's had the opportunity to talk about it yet, or they think that they've got it under wraps, or it's a bit of an under the radar sort of scenario, there might be a bit of a defensive sort of you know, situation that you're in. I mean, what's the best way do you think that people should approach, you know, other people that are maybe challenged and battling some form of addiction?
Yeah, I guess obviously you've got to have some sort of, you know, background knowledge on, you know, what you think they're battling. So I always think it's good to, if you've got some sort of inkling of, like, if you think one of your friends is, you know, battling with gambling, just getting online and just having a look. You know, there's plenty of stuff out there about the signs of, you know, gambling addiction. For me, it was like constantly tired, you know, always going back to my phone. If we're at the pub just having a few beers with the boys, I'd go off and, you know, stand by myself in a corner. And, you know, we might have a little punters club, which we always, as we say on the podcast, like, we got no issue with gambling. Like, it's not gambling that we've got the issue with, you know, punters club. But then I'd put my $100 in the punters club, but then I'd be betting like $500 of my own money on the same sort of thing. Like, the fix wasn't there.
Yeah.
So I guess knowing who you're speaking to is a really big one. So me probably knowing that I'm in a professional environment and has dealt with, you know, like pretty direct feedback for a lot of my career. You know, I got sat down and they were like pretty like blunt with me.
Mm.
But they're like, all right, we've been hearing stuff. You know, we know you owe money. Like, there's this. All right, we want to see your bank accounts. And I was like, I got hit like straight between the eyes. And I was like, wow. But it was the best thing they ever did for me. But not everyone's going to be able to go, oh, yep. Like, straight away, I went, look, I'm probably in a bit of trouble. When not everyone's going to do that because, you can get your back up a little bit. So I guess the best the things we talk about is, trying to get them in a setting that, they're pretty comfortable in, their home or, a cafe you usually go to or something like that, or just going for a walk and just saying, look, I know this might come across as wrong or I might be right, but, I want to talk to you about your gambling habits. And pretty much from there, it'll either open up or it'll get shut straight down. But if it gets shut down, it's just say, look, I'm worried about it. I know you're telling me not to worry about it, but just so you know that I'm actually thinking about you. And if there is something going on, that I'm going to be here if you come to terms with that. So it's just it's a really hard conversation to have. And as we said, like before, gambling's one of those ones where you don't really see what's going on. It's all on the phone or usually by yourself or whatever. So, you see someone who's been on drugs or alcohol and you can see him pretty well affected. But, with gambling, it's a bit of a little silent threat that eats away at people eventually. But, we've been dealing with a lot of people just, who are on the brink of ending it all, which is it's absolutely scary to think that gambling can do that to someone.
You mentioned before there was somebody that reached out to you was talking about their own challenges. How often do you get messages from people since you launched the podcast last year? Do you get quite a few people reaching out and just sharing some feedback or some of their stories?
Yeah, probably two a week. Yeah. I reckon we have a couple, and we've probably found like 90% of them are males between like 20 to 30. Mm. So it's a real common, demographic that we see where these blokes are coming to us and saying like, oh, it's really starting to affect my mood. It's really starting to affect my relationship, and she has no idea why I'm battling. And they're the sort of messages that, especially now that we've started to create some sort of voice for ourselves, that people are going, oh, look, I'm battling. And instead of going and see a psych, I might just go and, I might click these boys a message and see what they say. And, because I never went to a psychologist. Like, I never went to Gamblers Anonymous or anything like that. All my, recovery was done by talking to other people who had been through gambling addictions and getting advice off them. So that's why I never, ever will not reply to, I'll reply to everyone. If they've got a genuine concern or worry or question, then I'll always reply to it because I know how important it is to have people, reply to you and answer you back when you're struggling.
It's a big responsibility to take on because, obviously you've got your own challenges that you deal with, and you're not a guy that's just sort of laying around not doing much. You're a busy guy. You've got a lot happening in your own life, and to be able to sort of put that out with confidence and just say, look, I am here. I've got the platform to talk about it, but also to interact with people. I mean, it's a huge responsibility. So, I mean, it obviously helps you to be able to help other people, as you said earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. And I understand that I don't have, the degree or what or anything like that. All I can do is give some advice out and, check in with them like I was one of their mates. And so, I've got no issue if I don't hear from someone for a couple of weeks after speaking to them and just saying, oh, how you going? How's the, the stuff with the gambling going? And a few times we've had people go, look, I haven't been able to stop. But, sometimes like, I've been able to tell my dad and me and him are, trying to, stop together and stuff like that. So that makes me feel like what we're doing is pretty worthwhile.
You mentioned earlier about that journalist. And one interesting thing that I've always seen, especially with professional sports, but especially like the football codes, is that the media and journalists tend to paint this really, I could be wrong, but this really unfair sort of brush across a lot of professional sporting players, where a lot of people outside of the game itself sort of live in excess and all the scandals, you know, I mean, it's what makes news, isn't it? It's what gets people talking. And do you find that, like, working in this professional environment where it's very extreme in a way, like, you know, you're getting mentally and physically challenged for so many years, you know, year in, year out, in front of a lot of people, a lot of eyes and ears on you, do you find that it raises the risk of people sort of finding other ways to get adrenaline and get that sort of rush, which is usually comes from addictive behavior? Do you find that sort of the risk increases a little bit with people that work in these more public domains?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, one of the things I worked out quickly was that, you know, excess money and a lot of extra time, you know, you're going to want to fill in with something. And if you don't find the right outlet, you know, that's when, you know, drugs, alcohol and gambling come into it. And especially for, you know, professional athletes, we're so competitive and we're so driven and, you know, we always want to win. So I found, like, speaking to, you know, numerous athletes from a lot of different codes about gambling, that, you know, they, when they lose, they don't want to lose again, so they keep going until they win, and then they get that, you know, that hit of it, you know, in their head, and they go, all right, I've got to win again, and then they lose, and then they're back into that cycle. So it's definitely a dangerous spot to be, but, you know, it's not just professional athletes, as we know. It's like, it affects a lot of people, but yeah, definitely, because as athletes, you've probably got that more of a chance to have that disposable cash, and, you know, you're meant to be setting yourself up for the rest of your life, because it doesn't go for forever. Like, as I found out, like, I retired, you know, a month ago, and it moves on pretty quickly without you, so you've got to get going. So when you're meant to be earning all this money and throwing it all down the drain because, you know, you're not filling your time adequately with proper outlets, it, you know, it can become something scary and it drags on past your sporting career.
What was the main motivation to retire? I mean, it's only a month ago. It's crazy that it's only been a few weeks that you've actually retired. I mean, was this something in the back of your mind for a little while leading up to it, or what was sort of the main reasons?
I was out of the team this year, and, you know, being a 29-year-old, I'm not old, but in, you know, professional sporting terms, like, I'm getting on. And mentally, I was a bit worn down after this year, you know, like, everyone going through COVID, not being able to see our families and all that sort of stuff. It just sort of all ate away at me, and then, you know, you don't play a game and you're 29, like, the writing's on the wall for you're probably done at your football club, and, you know, the option was probably there that I could maybe go play at another club. But to be honest, like, I'm more than happy to, you know, and, you know, in hindsight now, I'm moving down to Tasmania with an amazing job and really, really looking forward to the next phase of my life. So I don't regret it in the slightest. You know, I know I was lucky that I got to play at the top level for 11 years, and a lot of people don't get to do that. And probably selfishly, I just stop. But, you know, I just mentally wasn't prepared to put myself through this next, you know, 6 weeks or whatever until, you know, you can still get put on a list. And I just wasn't interested in waiting around or anything like that. So me and my manager and the club, we all made a decision that, you know, I was done and that was going to be it. And I was pretty content with that. You know, it's an emotional time when you decide that something you've done since you're straight out of high school and you're no longer going to do it. Even in my head, I knew it was right. I was still highly emotional about it and speaking to the boys, but yeah, it's something that I look back fondly, and, you know, but I seriously reckon with all this stuff that I've been able to build during my career in terms of off-field stuff, the best things in my life are still to come.
Yeah, definitely. And especially to be able to make that decision while you like you had the control of making that decision rather than sort of being, you know, it might be another player that might sort of cling on and just continue to bounce around clubs and then sort of get older and older and less wanted. And at least at this point in time, you know, you've been able to sort of line it up and make and have a little bit more control over your destiny while you still can. Because, I mean, I just looked at it initially. I thought, man, like retiring, you haven't even hit 30 yet. You're a baby. And I'm thinking, I'm like, of course, like, you know, completely different, you know, scenario of being, you know, a professional sportsman. Like, it's a different world altogether. And I mean, to be playing for over a decade as well is incredible. But it's always funny, sort of, when you just look at an age of somebody and you go, retiring? Oh, it's insane. It's cool. But it must have been a weight off your shoulders, sort of, you know, even over the past few weeks, sort of adjusting to this new world of not having that element in your life anymore and all this stuff coming ahead in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess there's things that, you know, being able to do that, you know, people take for, like, I haven't been able to do. Like, even, you know, going for a long walk at night time, if I did that during my career, I used to worry about how I was going to feel the next day. So that's how, paranoid I was about that. And, you know, the things you eat and, like, how are they going to affect you? And, you know, my dad was based in Darwin for 6 months, so he could meet my daughter and his granddaughter. And he came midweek one day and he met my granddaughter for the first time. And he's like, oh, let's have a beer. And I was like, oh, it's a Tuesday night. And I was like, if I have one beer, he's like, is this going to affect how I train tomorrow? And of course it wouldn't, but these are the sort of things that go through your head. Mm. Where now I just don't have to worry about that sort of stuff. Like, it's pretty full on, like the games that you play in your head to try and make sure that you're absolutely ready to go at all time. So, you know, two big training sessions a week and all the weight sessions and being prepared for game day. It's just, yeah, it's a lot, but, you know, the benefits of it, of playing footy, are obviously really good as well. It's just, by the end of it, I was pretty much cooked. And I think, you know, having this pandemic this year had a bit of a role in that as well.
One thing that, I mean, it's a little bit embarrassing to say, but I'll throw myself out here, and it's a bit of a, I think it's a bit of an accountability piece for myself, but I think, like, for me, with this podcast that I've been doing it for, like, I don't know, 5 years, and, like, had a bunch of different people on, lots of different backgrounds, but I don't think I've ever had anybody with an Indigenous background on the podcast. And, I mean, it's pretty embarrassing for me to actually verbalise that, and I could just, I guess, push it to the side and just pretend, you know, just go, oh, just play dumb to it. But, and it wasn't a big influence to talk to you, because I was already sort of fixated on your podcast and your story and learning about just your world. But I listened to the episode you released, oh, I don't know, about a week or two ago with your mum. And yeah. I loved it, man. I absolutely loved it. And yeah, okay, so this, you know, ever since I've grown up, and I grew up in Queensland, like rural Queensland, lived all over the place, and sort of all the topics of, you know, our First Nation and the culture and the history of this country has always been prevalent. But it's, I think, as a white guy, it's always distant, and it shouldn't be. And so I really, listening to that episode, I found like this connection where I just thought, wow, this is something that so many of us just neglect. And it's not always intentional, but at the same time, we've got to take some responsibility because we have neglected it. I mean, for you growing up as an Indigenous person and sort of going through your own experiences, obviously it's a big part of your identity, it's a part of your life. And you know, I think I was reading that you'd sort of done a bunch of programs with the club, with the Lions, and some stuff on the side. I mean, what does the future hold for you in that space? Obviously, you've got, you know, your story from an addiction point of view and helping the community, and you've got this new sort of job opportunity down in Tassie. But from your background and your heritage, I mean, where does that sit, and what's the future look like for you, and as far as sort of bringing more attention to it?
Yeah, I guess as we spoke about in that episode, my mum, that, you know, we mum come from Darwin and went back to Geelong with dad, and so we grew up away from like our Indigenous family, and we're really, really lucky that mum was so strong in her beliefs and her culture that, you know, she made sure that we knew everything that we needed to know about, you know, being an Aboriginal person. And I'm really thankful for that, because there's a lot of people who grow up away from their land, and it's not until they're, you know, 18, 19, 20 where they can go travel themselves, where they can go on to, you know, go find their land and go talk to people and talk to their elders about stories and stuff, where I didn't have to wait until I was, you know, 18, 19, 20. I was, you know, doing it from a young age. And, you know, unfortunately, like, you know, I was pretty strong and, well, not unfortunate, I was just so strong. And, you know, being a 90s kid, you know, in kindergarten, I was getting teased about, you know, being this little black kid running around in kindergarten in this little small town outside Geelong. But, you know, I think it's so important that in schools, and that's why I'm so proud of my mum and what she does, because she's able to, you know, instill, you know, this culture in the curriculum and make sure it, you know, they're hitting the right things and it's not tokenistic, and, you know, these kids walk out of school and they're not, you know, these brats who, you know, talk shit about Aboriginal people when we talk about Survival Day and stuff like that, because, you know, there's genuine hurt and there's genuine, you know, sorrow that comes along with that day. So all I'm trying to do is say, like, look at this culture, like, it has survived so much. It survived an invasion. It survived over like 40,000 years of constant growth and development. And then it just survived like genocides, survived massacres, whitewashing of the culture. It survived all these things. And we're still here and we're still talking. Why aren't we celebrating this more than we are? Because, you know, we speak and a lot of people go, oh, you're just sooking again. And I'm like, well, I'm not sooking. I'm just trying to raise a point that, you know, what's going on right now with certain areas of Australian culture do not include or do not even support the Indigenous culture at all. And like my dad's Danish, so like I see it from both sides, but it's not about both sides. Like, I'm lucky that I've got two really strong cultures instilled in me. And, you know, my dad is so, he backs me and my siblings up and my mum up to go, use your voice and be strong Aboriginal people and make sure that, you know, the people around you know that. And, you know, with the podcast, we get to speak about these things and, you know, call out the things that we think are injustices, and we'll keep speaking about it, because until there's, you know, there's change in the attitude towards Indigenous people in this country, people can say all they want, but as long as they keep saying things like, oh, you get all this money from the government and get over it on Australia Day, it happened all these years ago, no one's going forward, and you keep driving in the pain. So we'll keep speaking about it, and hopefully one day, and like, I've got a young daughter now who's only 7 weeks old, and I don't want her to have to deal with some of the stuff I dealt with. Like, my mum didn't want me to deal with the stuff she dealt with, and her parents did. So we're just trying to make it a better country and a more inclusive environment for, you know, Indigenous people.
Well, congrats on your daughter as well, only 7 weeks ago. Massive, massive event for you. It's a tough one. And I say that lightly because, you know, my challenges versus what, you know, Aboriginals have gone through for, well, ever since, you know, white guys started coming to Australia, you know, has been absolutely horrendous. And I guess the challenge that I feel from my end, and I mean, I've got no idea what I'm talking about. And I think that's part of the problem, is that I think the responsibility. And you can tell me, you tell me if I'm going off course myself, but I kind of feel that the responsibility that I have is to obviously learn to begin with and understand and educate myself. But there has to be an element of time and place when to talk and when not to talk. And I kind of feel that one thing that I see a lot, which I don't know if it's actually a good thing or not, is there's a lot of white people that are talking about it. And sometimes that's good, but sometimes I feel like they're just too loud. And there's not enough people, there's not enough Aboriginal people out there that are given the opportunity to be able to talk and express themselves. And it's almost like, you know, you've got a bunch of white people that think they're doing the Aboriginal population a service by talking on their behalf, but actually silencing them in the process as well. And it's just like this really weird sort of balancing act where it's like, you know, we should be talking about it, but at the same time, we shouldn't just be one side talking about it and dominating the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's people in the media who've got the balance absolutely right. There's a couple of journalists that I know that, you know, who speak, and not my argument, but I was annoyed with this bloke's comments. I was like, oh, fuck him, I'm going here. But it was that conversation. It was, oh, here we go, she's speaking to the Aboriginal people again. And I said, well, she's stuck up for us every day for the last 3 years. Mm. So she can speak on behalf of us, because we all trust what she says about the Indigenous issues in this country. And then he's like, here he is, a good boy. You know, fall in line when the white people tell you to do it. I'm just like let him go. But, yeah, all it is education about why some Aboriginal people talk the way they do about certain events that happened in history. There's not enough people who know about what went on when the first fleet came. They don't know enough about the Stolen Generation, which was still going on when my mum was born.
Yeah.
So people don't know enough about that they don't understand how, you know, everyone knows, you know, the story about the rainbow snake and the rainbow serpent and, you know, Dreamtime stories. Well, that's how Aboriginal people pass on their stories. So when something bad happens to our family, that story gets passed on because we use our words to tell stories. We don't put it in writing or anything like that. So from all those years ago when all that started to happen, those stories keep getting passed along. And we keep feeling the pain that, you know, our ancestors did hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Mm. So we still feel that. And then there's not enough education around, like, why do Aboriginal people still feel the pain that, you know, happened all that time ago? And there's just, yeah, there's a lot of layers that come with it, and there's a lot of things that, you know, go on in, you know, regional towns and all that with, you know, every black kid in Northern Territory, every kid in incarceration in Northern Territory is a black kid. Mm. So there's obviously a lot going on.
Yeah.
So there's things that you know, people, we all need to talk about. We all need more education around why that's happening and how we can make that better. But, yeah, the big thing that irks me a lot is, you know, we get told that stop sooking, stop falling in line, stop doing this. It can get quite frustrating, but I'll keep fighting a good fight, and I'll keep making sure that, you know, I'll keep using my voice for good, and, you know, keep, you know, making sure that, you know, I'm a proud Aboriginal person from the Tiwi Islands, and that, you know, I'll pass my culture on to my daughter, and, you know, if we have more kids, and then we'll keep passing it on to, you know, our grandkids and stuff like that, because that's the best way to keep passing on the stories is, you know, you keep passing on your culture, and it's something I'm really looking forward to is, you know, instilling that into my family.
You've got that advantage where, you know, you've been in the public domain for quite a few years. You've got a name for yourself and people know who you are. So it gives you a little bit of leverage as well to be able to use that platform for good. And, you know, like you got the podcast and obviously the work that you're doing in other spaces as well, which is all positive. It sort of just accelerates a lot of the messages that you're able to put out there into the wider space with people. Because, I mean, even you know, I like to think I'm a pretty nice guy and I'm pretty open-minded with a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of unconscious bias, or there's a lot of things that I'm just, you know, ignorant to. I just got no clue over, and especially when you just hang out with a bunch of, you know, all your mates are white and it's very much white culture and it's a bit bland and you know, it's just, it is what it is. And then you're just so disconnected. You just got no clue. And then whatever you see is usually what's pumped out through the media, and a lot of that's rubbish until there's, you know, one or two events a year. And then you got a little bit of positivity, but then, as you said before, there's also the retaliation of people that don't get it and don't understand, and so that it's also an opportunity for people to fight back and start to create arguments out of something that should just be an awareness piece and an education piece for the country.
Yeah, 100%, absolutely.
Mate, I'm going to stop chewing your ear off because I could keep talking for ages, but cheers for the chat and fucking congrats for the podcast as well. So what's the best way for people to check out what you're doing and just follow your story?
Yeah, so I'm Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Podbean. So yeah, we're called Addicted to the Game, or you can just punch in ATTG, or you can email us on ATTGpodquestions. @gmail.com. But yeah, we're always open for a chat, and you know, if you're looking for the things that we're talking about, like they're all described, like, well, we'll talk about Indigenous issues, we'll talk about mental health, we'll talk about you know, addiction, and you know, they're all clearly labelled, so we're not telling everyone to listen to everyone, but we do find that people, you know, like certain areas, so if you have a look and, you know, leave a comment and just let us know how we go, because we've had a few people tell us we're pretty shit too, so that's fine as well.
you gotta take the good with the bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, go and check out Addicted to the Game by going to attg.podbean.com. They're also on the socials, Twitter and Instagram, attgpodcast or _podcast, or maybe it's both or variation. Anyway, I'll have the links in the show notes over at andysocial.net and andydowling.net. Nice and easy to go and check all that out. And of course, you're listening to this podcast through a podcast player, so just go and use the search function, type in Addicted to the Game. Go and subscribe, go and follow, go and give them a rating and reach out to them. Let them know what you thought of this episode and of course, what they're doing as well. Massive props to Alan and crew for raising a really important topic that is often not discussed in the public domain and within family circles and friends and all that sort of stuff about addiction in general, but especially gambling addiction is something that is definitely left in the shadows, and it's something that is still celebrated and talked about quite a bit in positive terms, but the negative consequences are often not discussed. So Alan and crew are doing some great stuff with their podcast and additional work there. So props to them. Now, before we wrap it up, of course, Patreon, patreon.com/AndyDowling. If you're not familiar with Patreon is a fantastic platform where you can regularly support the podcast and supports us from only a buck a month. Dirt cheap, set and forget, you won't even notice it. And there are additional tiers if you want access to the weekly Patreon podcast, which comprises of a bit of karaoke, some interesting stories, stuff that I've learned from around the world. What else we've got? I talk about shit that I've been listening to and watching and reading. I've got a little segment called Planes, Trains, and Andymobiles. Can't even say my own fucking name. And all sorts of silliness, lots of dribble. And I'm certainly giving you a preview of that right now by dribbling into this mic. But go and check it all out, patreon.com/AndyDowling. A massive, massive thank you to everyone that does support on there. It just completely backs this podcast financially, takes a lot of the pressure off. It helps me to focus on just reaching out to people and focusing on getting the podcast recorded and then having these great conversations. And I'm very, very close to reaching that first goal of increasing the podcast to 2 guest episodes a week. I've spoken about this quite a bit over past episodes of the podcast, but the way I'm going to do it is the Monday morning podcast will be a new guest from a range of different backgrounds, as you've come to expect with Antisocial. It won't just be music or comedy or whatever. It'll be the sciences and just the weird and out there different backgrounds and interests and all sorts of stuff. So it'll be an eclectic mix of guests that are on Monday mornings. And then more than likely Thursday morning will be the secondary episode, and that'll be either a return guest So someone who's previously been on the podcast, or an Australian musician. And I really want to highlight the great Australian musicians that are out there, but I want to do it in a way which doesn't just turn the podcast into a music podcast, because there's so much more to this, and there's so many amazing people out there that aren't in music that I want to talk to. So best of both worlds, and I will do that once I hit my first goal on Patreon. So come on over, patreon.com/AndyDowling, and get behind that. And a big thank you in particular to my mates, me legends on the social circle tier, and the we've got a talk tier, the $10 and $20 tiers. We've got Andrew from Perth, Mick G from Sydney, Ash from Deniliquin, Dan from Dapto, Rod from Rayleigh in North Carolina, Patrick from Canberra, Liam from Brisbane, Chris from Sydney. We've got Brendo from Leeton, Tim from Canberra, James from Brisbane. We also have Christian from Canberra as well. So Christian from Canberra and Patrick from Canberra, the Canberra duo, are the $20 tier supporters. So thank you very much, guys. The Social Circle tier and everybody that supports on the $1 and $5 tiers as well, greatly appreciated. It's a massive, massive help, and just the sky's the limit with this podcast. So thank you very much. Don't know how many times I can say thank you, but I'm going to say thank you one more time. So that's it, folks. Let's say it again. Thank you for listening. Thanks for supporting. Keep spreading the word, social media love, all that sort of shit. I don't even know what I'm talking about now, so I'm going to wrap it up. Next week's episode is, what is it? Comedian, possibly, maybe? I can't remember. Anyway, there's going to be another fantastic episode coming next week. So until then, folks, take care. Ta-ta. Bye-bye. Larry, please.